A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hi everyone, this is your host Dana Balutz. We recently wrapped season 4 of Kerning Cultures. And before we go into deep production mode for our next season, we thought we'd leave you with an episode from another Kerning Cultures Network production. It's called Al Empire. Al Empire is a podcast that features awesome and exceptional Arabs around the world and their journey to the top of their industry. For this third season of Al Empire, I sat down with the amazing Palestinian-American stand-up comedian and actor, Mohammed. We discussed being a refugee in Houston, Texas, touring comedy clubs post-9/11, and how he hopes to influence the culture with his art. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to Al Empire on your favorite podcast app to receive new episodes every week. That's Al Empire, A-L-E-M-P-I-R-E. Thanks so much. Take care.
It went viral. It was everywhere.
I don't even remember being like there was a Muslim doing stand-up close to me, if they weren't even Arab.
I felt insulted. I was like, where is my audience?
If not me, who? Why can't I do it?
This is Al Empire. Stories of exceptional Arabs around the world and their journey to the top. I'm Dana Balutz, and welcome back to season 3 of Al Empire. I know it's been a minute since we've dropped an episode of Al Empire, and I promise it's for good reason. We've been super busy working on new seasons of Kerning Cultures, which if you haven't listened to, please go do that. But after this, not now. I know a lot of you have missed Al Empire, and honestly, I miss it too. So we thought we might as well just come back and kind of say hi again and meet some amazing people that we have lined up for you. So let's get into it. We're kicking off the season with someone who is amazing. An icon, not just in Hollywood, but obviously for Arab Americans worldwide. He is none other than the amazing comedian Mohammed.
Scan my travel document, huge exclamation point comes up. Please seek help from representative. I'm, excuse me, ma'am, the check engine light just came on and this damn thing is about to explode.
I remember the first time I heard Mo, which I think is probably how many of us first heard about Mo. It was a clip of him doing a bit about being at the border authority.
She's like, sir, this is a not a passport. I speak English perfectly, ma'am. I don't know why you're talking to me this way.
And I thought it was so funny. I think I watched that clip like at least 20 times. And people were sharing it on WhatsApp and sharing it by email. And then here we are today, many years later. Mo has his own Netflix show and many others and is building an empire of his own. He's not just a comedian, but he's an actor, a writer, and a million other things. It's incredible to have witnessed his ascension from afar. So before we begin, we're going to take a step back and say, if you've been living under a rock and don't know who Mohammed is, he's a Palestinian-American comedian. He spent his early years in Kuwait, but in October 1990, when Mo was 9, like many people, his family was forced to flee during the first Gulf War. And they moved to the U.S. and ended up settling in none other than Houston, Texas. You might recognize Mo from the hit Hulu show Rami. He's also in the DC superhero film Black Adam, and he has several shows on Netflix. Two of them are comedy specials that I highly recommend, The Vagabond from 2018 and Muhammad's in Texas from 2021. Both so, so funny. And his latest show, a series, is pretty incredible.
Would you like to try some chocolate hummus?
You say chocolate hummus? You just insulted my grandmother.
Lo siento, I did not know that hummus was Mexican.
The show is called Mo. It's on Netflix, just M-O. And it's a comedy drama loosely based on his own life as a Palestinian refugee growing up in Texas.
I've never been to Palestine. I don't have citizenship there. I don't have citizenship here. I'm like a refugee free agent.
I watched the whole thing in one sitting. I properly binged it. And so last year, I had the immense honor of interviewing Mo for the first time and for El Empire. He was in a studio in Houston and I was in LA. And my audio sadly sucks and is pretty terrible for this recording. And to be honest, my recorder ran out of battery and I hate making excuses, but I hope you can still kind of listen to it and enjoy it.
Mo, obviously it's well known that you came to this country as a refugee, and for the purposes of this podcast, we know a lot about your background and how you came from Kuwait. But I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about when you arrived to Houston as a refugee, if when you think of that moment, if you have a particular memory that comes to mind. You're smiling, so I guess you already know the answer.
I mean, it's a lot, but I just remember just being fish out of water here. You know, I just remember that when we first got here, it was like 2 days before Halloween, and I've never heard about what Halloween was. Nobody even like told me like, oh, Halloween's coming, FYI, people are going to be dressed like psychopaths, you know, like nobody ever said anything. And then like 2 days later, everybody was just walking around like zombies and just looking crazy. And I was just mortified. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And it was a lot. It was a lot to take in, but yeah, I mean, that's like one of the funny things that happened. But when I first got here, it was obviously like a big learning curve. I was 9 years old. I was mad. I was confused. I, you know, had a lot of questions, but that was like the big thing when I first got here. That was like getting used to American culture, understanding Western culture, and just kind of connecting the dots that way and understanding it. So that was a big, big deal. And it went on for a while. There was a lot of catching up to do. So I made a fool of myself a few times in school. It was just part of the process.
There was a point where you stopped going to school, I read, and you kind of became a little bit of a rebel, and your teacher made a deal with you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was 14. It was right when my dad passed away, alhamdulillah. And I just quit at that point. You know, it was just 5 years of trying to assimilate at that point and working really hard to fit in and making great friends, though, that I still have to this day. But it was just like the last straw for me. I just kind of like quit, just quit everything. I just stopped going to school. I just stopped. I was like a little grown man, you know. I started working when I was like 12 years old, and I was like, have you ever seen that movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
How could I possibly be expected to handle school on a day like this?
I was living like that the whole time. I was just going to baseball games, sitting at the, you know, first baseline in like great seats. I was selling like fake watches to people in the neighborhood, mostly, you know, guys that were kind of like in my similar situation that stopped going to school as well, that were making money, God knows how, but I never asked. I just would just sell all these like sunglasses and watches. I found the wholesale district through my dad before he passed away, and figured you can get like merchandise through there and then you could flip it. And so that's what I was doing. I was like, oh, I'm making good money. I'm going to be a comedian anyway. Like, and I was just going through a lot emotionally. I just left. I was just living my best life. And then my teacher, my English teacher, Mrs. Reed, and Mrs. Broderick in ninth grade, Mrs. Reed in particular, walked up to me and she said, how would your father feel if you don't graduate? Which would be fadiha, man. If you don't graduate, it's like a huge fadiha. Like, it would be horrible. Yeah, big scandal for those that don't speak Arabic. It would be a big, big scandal. My family, I'm the youngest. I'm the only one. Everybody else has graduated, has multiple degrees, and it would be horrible. And she goes, don't you want to be a comedian? I was like, yeah. because I made it really well known. I would tell everybody, I'm going to be a comedian, I'm going to do stand-up comedy, blah, blah, blah. That's what I was going to do. And everybody was just like, yeah, yeah.
A lot of pressure on yourself.
I just knew, you know. And I just kept saying it. And I figured if I kept saying it, then something would happen. And so my teacher, she made a deal with me. She goes, if you can go up in front of the class and for extra credit, if you can recite a monologue from Shakespeare, since it's English class, I will let you do stand-up in front of the class and help you make up the assignments so you can pass this class at least. But the deal is you can't skip and you can't skip any other classes. And if I find out you skip, I'm going to give you the same grade you have now and I'm going to fail you. I was like, this is a no-brainer. I just went up in front of the class and I was like, can I just do this monologue from Hamlet right now? And she was just like, yeah. I was like, does it have to be like serious? Can I just make it funny in front of the class? She goes, yeah, that'd be go for it. I was like, okay. So I just went up in front of the class, to be or not to be. And I just like riffed, you know, playing with it and just playing with the text. And the whole class was like laughing like crazy. And I was hooked. I was like, oh man, Mrs. Reed, can I come in tomorrow and do some stand up? She was like, yeah, you can. Absolutely. So I went in front of the class the next day and did some stand up that I riffed on. And I would do impressions of like delivery, pizza delivery drivers. And then the person's reaction to that delivery. And then what I would do is I would put on like a super tight sports coat and I would roast the kids in class as Chris Farley. It killed and kids were laughing. And then I went on for a while, a few weeks. And then my teacher took me to the theater arts department. Like, hey man, this kid's been doing like original stand up and all these accents and stuff. I think he belongs in theater. And she took me to Eugene Kreisner, who was a theater arts teacher at that time. She goes, okay, sure. Come audition for something. And I was too scared. I was like, oh man, audition. I don't know. It was right. And so the next year I went in and auditioned and I made it. And then next thing you know, like 6 months later, I was like getting lead roles, all the lead roles in theater. And I was sneaking away and doing stand up whenever I could. I was too young to get into the clubs. And they were like, well, your mom has to bring you or your parent has to bring you. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to tell my mom to bring me to a comedy club where there's like liquor everywhere and all kinds of stuff. Like my mom would never do that. All she hears is club. I'm like, my son's just going to be, oh, that's what he's going to be. So it didn't work out. So my friend Nick, he was the one that would sneak me to the comedy clubs. When I was 17, he took me to the comedy club and he was like, Mo, are you ready? This is the first day of the rest of your life. And he was being corny, but funny, but also serious. But he was right.
I have an 8-year-old nephew. He's like my own son. Right? But his name happens to be Osama. Yeah. I'd love to take him out. I'd love to take him out. I said, hey, Osama, you want to go out to Walmart? I'll buy you a toy. He's excited. Yeah. We get to Walmart now. He's 8 years old. He's running away. I can't call him.
So that's how I got into the comedy club scene. I showed up to the Houston Funniest Person competition. I ended up making it through like the first pass. I didn't have any material, but it was like amazing that I even made a wild card. And then the next year I was in the finals of that contest. And then I realized, you know, comedians shouldn't be in competition with each other. They should be just outworking each other, you know, just trying to get as many hours as you can on stage. And that's what I did. And comedians would just snatch me up. Headliners would just be like, hey, man, you want to come open for me? You want to come feature for me? And that lasted about maybe 6 months before they were like, okay, you need to go do your own thing now. You need to just go away. Because I was meant to be a headliner. You know, that's what I am.
I want to ask you, Mo, like, you know, a lot of Arab Americans, I think, either choose especially creatives, like either lean into their Arabness or lean out of it and try and assimilate and try and just be like everyone else and go that route. You very much have chosen a route where you're leaning into your backgrounds, you're leaning into the fact that you're Arab American. And I wonder if that's a conscious decision or you were put in that box or like, how did you make that decision?
Well, I was very conscious of it ever since I was a little kid. When I would show up to the comedy clubs and I realized, like, I'm the only one here. You know how hard that is? You know how much guts it takes to, like, travel the South by yourself in a car in these little hole in the walls to have all this, like, prejudice against you while you're doing that? You know, it was extremely difficult.
I get a lot of different reactions, man. I was working in Little Rock, Arkansas. Everything was going great. Yeah, that's right, baby. I was working, I'm on stage, everybody's laughing, having a good time. I say I'm an Arab American, the whole room gets quiet, and one guy in the back goes, oh, hell no.
I don't even remember being like, there was a Muslim person around doing stand-up close to me, if they weren't even Arab. I was just like, wow. Well, if there's nobody else like me, might as well talk about the stuff that I know and the stuff that where I come from. Absolutely, I leaned into it. I think the people that don't lean into it are idiots, personally. I think they're trying to be something that they're not. And it's something like you're denying who you are. Where for me, it was always about just being authentic to myself and authentic to my heritage and where I come from. And I always knew that Hollywood needed to catch up. And whenever they catch up, I'll be here. It's truly into like being authentic to myself was always the goal. You know, like what a tragedy would it be that I made it off of pretending I was something that I'm not? Boy, that would really just be gut-wrenching. How have you influenced the culture? That is like the barometer of success to me. And the fact that people are using what you said on stage to either create a business out of, create TikToks, create videos, t-shirts, or what have you, that tells you like, oh, I'm doing something very powerful here to where it's truly influencing culture. And that's what I'm thinking about. And that's what I view as like success. But when I released Muhammad in Texas, and then like a week later, my mom gets a WhatsApp video of me, and they don't even know that's my mom. Crazy. Or if my aunt from our village of like 2,000 people forwards her a video of me of the encore, whoosh, boy, I've done something there. I got chills right now. Like that makes me emotional. It's like, man, the ride has been so heavy and so long that, man, it just makes me feel so good that I'm able to like put my stamp on things.
I just wonder how you do it. Like, how do you like, where did you get, like, first of all, Arabs are really judgy, you know, yeah. Like so judgy, not only in the family unit, but the outer, like everyone is so overtly judgmental, I think, in our culture as well. Like, it's a great thing. There's a lot of passion, but I just wonder, like, how do you continue to do that? How do you get in your car and go to the South after 9/11? Are you kidding me? Like, that is nuts. Like, where did you get that from?
I just really like knew in my core, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, like, and the more people said that I couldn't do it, the more I had to do it. And that's it. And it sucks. And there was tears. There was like exhaustion. There's all of it. But I knew and nobody else did. And you have to be honest with yourself. Like some people get into business and I see it and they're like, they don't belong here. Like you stink. Like you're never going to get good. Or you don't really have the purpose to like be a stand-up comedian. You just want to be famous. You just want to be popular. You just want attention. You don't really love the art form. You're just doing stand-up so you can get an acting job. Where for me, it's like everything that I get outside of stand-up is to do this thing more, which is stand-up. So that's where it is. And so it just feels really good to be able to do these things and start telling these stories and to get into it. And we're just barely scratching the surface now. Like there's so much to come, inshallah. Like I'm very, very excited to to put it all out there before I'm gone from this place.
Do you remember your, like, when you felt like, oh, I made it? Like, do you remember that breakthrough moment or that?
I still don't feel that way. I still don't feel that way.
Come on.
No, one lie. I swear to God, I don't feel that way at all.
When you're on stage, Dave Chappelle, you don't feel like, you know, when you're on Drami or when you have this amazing special on Netflix.
Yeah, I don't have a moment like, I made it, you know, like this is what it is, baby. Look at me. You know, like nothing that hasn't come out yet. I don't know if necessarily it will, because it's just about like creating more and more and more. But definitely like having those moments where it's like Royal Albert Hall and it's you and Jon Stewart and Chappelle, like doing shows there and, you know, like four nights or just touring Europe together and you're just like, oh man, this is the stuff.
Start clapping your hands right now. You know him from his Netflix special Vagabond. He also has a Netflix TV show about to come out called Mo. Give it up for my boy, Mo Emmer.
But please, I hope nobody watching this, I'm like, oh, he's full of shit. No, I do appreciate what I'm doing and I think it's dope. And I think the moment where I felt like, oh man, like we are doing this, is when I pulled up on my motorcycle in full costume where I was filming Black Adam. It was like a cigarette in my mouth. I'm hanging out and just, I just pull up right to set. And it's this huge set and there's The Rock in full costume. You know, he's The Rock. He looks spectacular in that damn thing. It's like the best costume ever. And the makeup artists are like, Mo, you look just so cool. I'm not going to lie. That was the coolest entrance ever. And I looked around. There's like this $300 million, you know, movie. I'm just looking around like, you know what? Yeah, I think we made it. You know what I mean? Like that was probably one of those moments. But I'm always in my body too much and I'm always like a chip on my shoulder type of dude and I need to like snap out of that a little bit, I'm sure. And I think that's what it is. It's just like having this fight in you all the time. And it comes from being displaced and it comes to landing in a place where most people don't understand and having to fight through like so many, just grind through so much misunderstanding. And I think I always feel like, I got to do more. I need to go. I need to, don't get comfortable. You know, I think that's like the immigrant mentality. You got to outwork everybody, you know?
I mean, what's great about you also is that I think you have, even in your comedy, you have a lot of empathy. Like I remember the Netflix special where at the end you talk about your neighbor in Houston.
When the hurricane came through, my neighbor, Scott, redneck Scott, this guy is the best. Okay. He's always prepared. So I'm never prepared because I know he's prepared. He's always like, yeah, I got generators. Hell yeah, I got generators. Yeah, Muhammad, I got you, baby. You know? When I came through, he hooked me up, bro. I plugged into the side of his house and took that extension cord all the way across that cul-de-sac and plugged my in. And that's what it's about, bro. They're trying to separate us. But the fact is, Muhammad's in Texas get along with redneck Scots all day.
We talk about kind of the division in this country and trying to amplify empathy and kindness. And that's one of my other favorite things about you is that you are constantly trying to promote empathy.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think it's really important. It's just, it's natural. And that part, by the way, in the special was spontaneous. I had it in my head. I didn't know what I was going to do or say in which direction it was going to go. I had some idea, and then I changed it in the middle of the performance. And it was honest, and that's the way it is. And I loved it. And they sent me, Scott and his wife sent me a picture of them together, and they watched the special. It was really cute. It was so cute. And we're still in touch, you know, and they're always going to be in my life. And people need to know, like, a Muhammad could be next door to redneck Scott and have a phenomenal relationship and maybe have more things in common than you think. Hopefully some of this stuff that some of this art that you could put out that can influence culture in a way and also just make you laugh and make you think in the best way possible. That's what it's about to me.
last question, Mo, is anything else that you want to say that I haven't asked you? And also, like, what do you need from us as the Arabs in diaspora, your Arab community, your
support
fans?
You know, it's like support. Yeah. It's like share it with everybody, tell everybody, like, you know, this is all the work. This is all for you. This is literally all for you. And not only for you, but for your kids, you know, like this is meant to open up doors for all of them and create some kind of stories for them that they can relate to and be a part of. And that's what I want. So you got to support that. You have to support that in a really big way, and you got to push it, because if I don't have that, then what's the point?
Mo did not have to take time out of his very busy schedule right before the show aired, and so I know that his press schedule was packed. He did not have to take time to drive to a studio in Houston and talk to our relatively small show. He talks about supporting Arab Americans and the diaspora, and this was just another example of how he does that in very practical terms. And I'd love if we can all show him support by watching the show, Mo. And catch Mo anytime he's in your city, support him, post about him. He's one of the good ones. This episode was produced by Finbar Anderson and Alex Atak, with amazing additional support from Ahmed Ashwood. It was edited by Alex Atak and Ahmed Ashwood, with research and fact-checking by Dina Sabri. Sound design and mixing was by Munzir Al-Hashim. A very special thanks to Majd Bani Oude for connecting us to Mohammed, and Quincy at Sacred Stone Media in Houston for his help recording this interview. No thanks goes to me for my poor recording skills. And one last thing, this season of Al Empire, we're releasing the full uncut video interviews with our amazing guests, including Mo. All you need to do is head to YouTube and search Al Empire, or follow us on our socials at Kerning Cultures. We'll be back next week. Take care.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.